Okay, good morning. It may be a shear of a different sort today, but it is clearly significant in an understanding of a number of psukim in Sefer Ezra. Otherwise, I wouldn't say anything unless it's part of the topic. But it's going to be a little bit of a digression. And it's also, in a sense, the relationship between a few psukim in Sefer Ezra and Hanukkah. So now, does that fit for today's year? It does. Okay. But it's going to be, I think it's going to be a little difficult. You're going to have to Hautkop, as your Rebbe ever told you as a little boy or girl, Hautkop. You're going to have to Hautkop. The shir is based on an essay by Rav Yitzchak Hutner, the Pachad Yitzchak. And there are some absolutely amazing ideas that he expresses there. The reference to Sefer Ezra will really be in chapter 8. Chapter 8, and I'm not skipping to 8, but I just wanted to see those psukim. Chapter 8 in Ezra, Pasuk 35. Chapter 8 in Ezra, Pasuk 35. 35. Habaim mehashvi bnei hakola, those who came back from captivity, the people of the exile. Hikrivu olot leElokei Yisrael, they brought korbanot ola to the God of Israel. Parim shneim azar. Al kol Yisrael. Elim Tishim Vishisha, there were Podim, Bullocks were 12, Elim Tishim Rams Tishim Vishisha, 96, Kvasim Shivim Vishiva, Shepsalach 77, Tzvidei Chatas, Shneim Asa, birds that were used for a Chatas were 12, Hakol Olal Hashem, everything was brought as an Ola before God.
Are these the people who came later?
This is already the people who have come with Ezra. Ezra is already... The truth is that we're going to see that Ezra is going to be nearly one of the last. Ezra and Nehemiah are going to be the last wave. They brought all sorts of sacrifices. Now the Gemara says that the number of these sacrifices and the way in which they were brought was something that was unusual. It was not the normal kind of sacrifice that was brought in the Bet HaMikdash. And the Gemara describes it as Hora'at Sha'ah Haita, a Psak Halacha for a particular moment in time. The Mefarshim explained that it was similar in nature to the sacrifices that were brought at the dedication of the Mishkan. Today we started reading in the Torah by davening in the morning the dedication of the Mishkan, which is in Parashat Naso. The dedication of the Mishkan each day, a different one of the princes of the tribes brought his sacrifices. There were things that were very unusual there, and we're going to see what was unusual about it. All right. That's all you have to know. This pasuk. That's it. That's the pasuk. Now, if you'll take the sheet that you have in front of you, we're going to start number one. Number one, the pasuk that we need is only the first pasuk in chapter 5 of Shir HaShirim. Bati legani achosi kala. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. Oriti modi. In the sami, I gathered the myrrh with the spices. Ochalti ya'ari in divshi. I ate ya'ari in divshi. Now, we're going to see Rashi is going to explain, and this is going to be extremely the significant four words Achalti Yavi Im Divshi. Dvash is honey, but it's honey, the sap that comes off a tree. Yavi is like from the word Yar, which is a forest. Now, it's the kind of sap or maple, the syrup that comes from a tree. And the Pasuk is saying, whoever it is, and we're going to see in the Rashi right away who this is, Ochalti, I ate Yari in Divshi, the wood, with the honey. Not only did I eat the honey, but I also ate, you know, it's like eating the plate up with the food. I ate the wood with the honey. Shatiti im yeni im halavi, I drank my wine with my fatty meats. Ichlu reim, eat friends, shtu v'shikru dodim, drink and sort of become high and heady, the lovers. Well, what's the pasuk talking about? So let's see the Rashi. The Rashi is based on a medrash in Bamidbar, a medrash in Shir HaShirim. Says Rashi the following, Basi Lagami, I came to my garden. What does this represent? Says Rashi, Bimei Chanukah Habayit, at the time of the dedication of the Bet HaMikdash, that's when I come, that's my garden. Obviously, who is it that's speaking according to Rashi? It is God who is speaking. Bati Lagami, I came to my garden. The Rashi is beneath the text. Beneath the text of Shir HaShirim. Bati Lagami, I came to my garden, Bimei Chanukah Habayit. God is saying that in the days of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, I came into my, that's my coming into my garden. That's my place. What is my place on earth? God's place on earth, the divine presence, is in the Beit HaMikdash. Oditi, Rashi explains, means lokatati, I gathered. Vuhu Lashon Mishnah, this is a term that's used in the Mishnah. Kimlo ore visalo, a person who is gathering fruit or gathering grapes, ore, he is gathering it and putting it into his basket. Vat Lashon Mikra, we also find it in the in a pasuk in Tehillim, Vo'aruha kol ovrei derech, or all who pass by will gather. What does it mean? What does it mean, I gathered my myrrh with my spices? What does it mean, Ochalti yardi, I ate the wood together with the honey? Says Rashi, V'nemar al shem ha-ketoret, she'iktiru ha-nesim, ketoret yachid, al mizbeach ha-chitzon v'nit kabla. At the dedication of the Mishkan, as I said, that which will be read in the Torah every day of Hanukkah, at the dedication of the Mishkan, each one of the princes of the tribes brought incense. Ketoret. Kafachat Malea Zahav Ketoret. Everybody brought Ketoret. Now, Ketoret, the halacha is that Ketoret, the incense is only brought by the tzibur, by the community. And here, something unusual and exceptional happens, and I may even at this point use the term anti-halachic, that during the time of the dedication of the Mishkan, what is not permitted at any other time seems to have been acceptable then. Each one of the princes brought personal ketoret, personal incense to the Beit HaMikdash, to the Mishkan. V'nemar, again Rashi says, this is said, al-shem ha-ketoret she-hiktiru ha-nesim. It said with regard to the incense that was brought by the Nesim, Ketoret Yachid, the Ketoret of an individual, Al Mizbeach HaChitzon, on the outer altar, Vinit Kabla, and it was accepted by God. So there are two things that happen over here. Number one, it's Ketoret Yachid, it's Ketoret that brought by the individual. Number two, it's brought on the outside altar. Every day, Ketoret was brought in the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash in the morning and in the evening, and it was brought for the community, and it was placed on the little altar inside the temple itself. V'hu davar she'eino nohed l'dorot. This is something that we don't do for all other generations, for the rest of the generations. This was something unusual and exceptional that was done at the time of the dedication of the Mishkan. Valkei Nema, therefore the pasuk goes on to say, Ochalti Ya'ari Im Divshi. What does Ochalti Ya'ari Im Divshi? Says Rashi, Yesh Dvash Shehu Gadel Bakanim. There is a honey that grows on the wood of trees, or on reeds, kemo, k'in shenema, as it says, b'ya'arat hadvash. If you remember when we learned back in Shmuel, it was the day of the great battle against Plishtim, and the entire camp came into a forest in which there was sap coming from the trees. And nobody ate because Shaul had declared a fast on that day. But Yonatan, his son, was not present at the time of at the time that he had proclaimed a fast. So he took a little bit of the honey and his eyes lit up, it says. Then there's a whole story that follows it. But he came in, or all of the people came into Ya'arat Hadvash, a forest of honey. The Ya'aratu Lashon Kone Ya'arot means like a stalk, kemo batosem basuf, when it says that Miriam placed Moshe in the suf amongst the reeds. So the Targum says, v'shavite, she placed him b'ya'ara. So ya'ar means kanim, or reeds that grow, and there are reeds that can have honey or sap in them, umotzitzin hadvash, like sugar cane. Bidu motzitzin hadvash, you suck out the honey, umashlichin ha'etz, and the wood, the cane, you throw away. Now, here's the important sentence in Rashi. When God says that when I came into my Beis Hamikdash, into my Mishkan at the time of its dedication, I ate the wood, the reed, with the honey. What does it mean, this metaphor, that I ate the reed with the honey? Says Rashi, V'ani meirov chiva, because of my great love for the Jewish people, Ochalti ya'ari im divshi, I ate. Ya'ari im divshi means Ochalti hakoneh, I ate the reed with the honey. And now Rashi spells it out even more clearly. Et she'eino ro'oi im haroi. That which is unacceptable together with that which is acceptable. That means that because of the great love of that first moment, when my divine presence comes to live amongst the Jewish people, I did something that was unusual, something that would not be acceptable throughout the rest of time. And as I guardedly and hesitantly used the term anti-halachic, something that stands, so to speak, in opposition to normative halacha. But God says, because of the great love that I have for the Jewish people at that time, I accepted et hat she'eino ro'im haroi, the unacceptable with the acceptable. Ketoret nedava, I accepted ketoret that was brought as a incense, that was brought as a donation. Now, ketoret is always obligatory and brought by the community as a whole. There were in that dedication, that 12 days of dedication of the Mishkan, the Nesiim, the princes, brought Seidim, goats, as a korban chatas, a sin offering. And that sin offering was a donation. A sin offering is never brought as a donation. It's always brought only as a result of an obligation. Somebody sinned. He has to bring a karma chatos. The idea that I'm going to go ahead on donating a chatos, a sin offering, is simply unheard of in halacha, unknown. We can call it unacceptable. But God, at that moment of great love, in a sense, it's the moment of the chuppah. Between God and the Jewish people, I accepted even the unacceptable. The goats that were brought as a sin offering, Shekrivu on the sin that the prince has brought, Ve'en Chatas Krev on a Dover. Ach, a sin offering cannot be brought as a donation. Va'ani Kibaltim Bo B'yom. On that day, I accepted them. That's really all we have to know. And we're going to come right away to the next source over here. It is the following. What we're also going to deal with is the Rambam. Rambam says mitzvahs, Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah of the Ner Chanukah is mitzvah chaviva hi ad ma'od, a very beloved mitzvah. Why does the Rambam single out Ner Chanukah as a mitzvah chaviva hi ad ma'od? There are many beloved mitzvahs. What is there that is so special about mitzvahs Ner Chanukah? All right. One further source, and then we're going to take you on a journey. Could somebody give me a watch? I left my watch home. My wife left her watch home. I have to be able to find myself. It's 5 after? Okay. Well, so yours is even faster? Yours is 5 after? Okay. All right. The Rambam. Down at the bottom of the page, you have two quotations from the Rambam. This is the Rambam halacha. Kol shi'urei hanesachim ho'amudim b'sefer Yechezkel. All of the measurements of the libations, together with every sacrifice, there were nesachim. Nesachim means wine or oil or flour that was brought together with every sacrifice, or nearly every sacrifice. And in Sefer Yechezkel, Yechezkel, in the last 10 chapters, Yechezkel describes what the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be like. He describes the structure of the third Beit HaMikdash. He describes the dedication ceremonies of the third Beit HaMikdash. Everything is already there in Sefer Yechezkel. The Rambam says that all of the measurements of the Nesachim that are brought to Sefer Yechezkel, Uminyan Otam HaKorbanot, and the number of those sacrifices, V'sidrei HaAvodah, and the order of the service, HaKtuvim Sham, that are written over there in Sefer Yechezkel, Kulam Miluim Heim, they are all called Miluim. I'll explain that in a moment. V'ein Nohagin L'dorot, and it's not something that we do for all generations. What Miluim means, those sacrifices that were brought before the official dedication of the Mishkan, and the sacrifices that were brought in the first 12 days of the Mishkan, were all called sacrifices of Miluim. Miluim means the dedication ceremonies. Says the Rambam that all of those karbonis that are mentioned in Sefer Yechezkel are all not something that is acceptable for all generations. It was only then. Elohanovi Tziva, the prophet, commanded Uferash, and he explained, Ketzad Yidiyu Makrivin Hamiluim, how they're going to bring those sacrifices in Chanukat HaMizbeach, Bimei HaMelech HaMashiach, when the Mizbeach is going to be dedicated in the days of Melech HaMashiach, Kisheyibone Bayit Shlishi, when the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be built. The next halacha says, Ukishem Shehikrivu HaNasim B'Chanukat HaMizbeach, Devarim she'ein kimotam ledorot vehikrivu b'shabbat, just as the Nesiim, the ones that we were talking about at the dedication ceremonies of the Mishkan in the desert, just as they brought at the dedication of the Mizbeach dvarim, things she'ein kimotam ledorot, things that you don't have like this for all generations. Rashi had mentioned the ketoret that was brought, and there were two aspects of the ketoret that were non-halachic: the fact that it was brought by an individual, not by the community, and the fact that it was brought on the Mizbeach outside, not on the Mizbeach inside. And then Rashi had also mentioned the fact that the Nesiim brought Korbanot Chatos, sin offerings, as a donation. And there's no such thing as a sin offering donation. It's an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in and of itself. But then it was done. And the Rambam has another unusual aspect of the dedication of the Nesiim. There was a Nasi in 12 days, you always have a Shabbos. And there was a Nasi who brought his carbon on Shabbos. Now, the only kind of sacrifices that are brought to the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbos are communal karbanot tzibur. But for a yachid, an individual, to bring on Shabbos, and it was permitted. Kach ha-Nasi makrif chanukato b'shabbat la'atid kasher meforash sham. At the dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash, there's going to be a Nasi who is going to bring his karbanot, personal karbanot on Shabbos, just as he had by the dedication of the Mishkan. The chen karbanot sheiklibu b'yimei Ezra haboim mehashvi. The sacrifices that were brought in the days of Ezra, those who came from the exile. Why does the Rambam use the words haboim mehashvi? Because that's the pasuk. That's pasuk 35 in chapter 8. Miluim haya. Those were dedication sacrifices. Ve'inan no hagin l'dorot. And they don't. We don't conduct ourselves that way for all generations. Avol dvarim hano hagin l'dorot hein divrei Torah shepidashnu. But anything that we conduct ourselves by for all generations, that's Torah. Not nevuah, not prophecy, but Torah, as we explain. And Torah, he describes what is Torah, k'moshe ha'atiku m'k'moshe Rabbeinu, as it was transmitted from the mouth of Moshe, ein l'hosef aleim v'ein l'groy, you can't add nor subtract. However, we do find the unusual and the exceptional. And the unusual and the exceptional is Ochalti Yarni in Divshi. I ate the reed, the wood, with the honey. When did I do that? I did that, God says, at the dedication of the Mishkan. I did it at the dedication of the Mishkan. Why? Because of the great passion of Chibur Rishona, the first moment of love. And at the moment of great love, you do things. God does things that he wouldn't do otherwise. So now we know, what do we know so far? That passion of first love was at the dedication of the Mishkan. We know from Yecheskel that it's going to be so at the dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash. We know from the Rambam and the Pasuk in Ezra that there was the unusual and the unacceptable and the unhalachic that became acceptable and halachic in the first flush of the dedication of the second Beit HaMikdash. And we also know it, and this I pointed out last week, though the Rambam doesn't bring it, the same thing was true at the dedication of the first Beit HaMikdash. The dedication of the first Beit HaMikdash, all of Israel ate on Yom Kippur. Eating on Yom Kippur. It's there in the pasuk clearly. Eating on Yom Kippur. I think that's the most anti or non-halachic of all. And it seems therefore that there is a pattern that is being established. The pattern that is established is that at the moment of dedication, what does the moment of dedication mean? That God's presence comes to rest amongst the children of Israel. That's a moment of great love. And in a moment of great love, God says, things will be, at this moment, things are different. What we wouldn't do otherwise, we do now. Ochalti yarvi in divshi. I accepted the halachically, normally unacceptable. What is non-normative became normative, but only at those moments. Only at those moments. Right. So, of course, on a simple level, we can understand, you know, the passion of the great love. There's one dedication that nothing has been said about, and that one dedication is the Chanukat Habayit of the Chashmonaim. My Chanukah, the Gemara says, what was Chanukah? Because on the 25th day of Kislev, which is just so happens to be today, right? Okay? On the 25th day of Kislev, when the Chashmonaim overwhelmed the Greeks, they came into the Beit HaMikdash and they didn't find they found only one jar of oil that had been untainted, and they lit the lit the menorah. All right. So now I'm going to begin the journey. What it really means is that every moment of love, or love has its different ways of expressing itself. Different people, or different events, or different moments require a different kind of expression of love. God is saying over here in the Medrash of Shir HaShirim that's brought by Rashi, that the God's expression of love at the moment of great passion is that he accepts the usually the unacceptable. Now there's a problem when the Rambam says that the way things are going to be at the dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash are expressed by Yechezkel, and this is unacceptable for all generations, but he's telling us how to do it at the establishment of the third Beit HaMikdash, is a bit problematic. Because when a prophet tells us, and a prophet has a right to tell us, a prophet has a right to tell us to do something non-halachic, as long as it is for a specified moment in time. The problem over here, of course, is, when does a prophet say that? When the moment comes. Here we have the unusual that Yechezkel, I don't know how many thousands of years before the establishment or before the construction of the third Beit HaMikdash, is already telling us exactly how it's going to be. This is unusual. I mean, we don't have that in the prophets. When prophets told us to do something, for example, Eliyahu is on the on Mount Carmel, and he tells his students to prepare a mizbeach, an altar, and they're going to bring sacrifice upon the altar. But there was a Beit HaMikdash at the time. And if there's a Beit HaMikdash at the time, you can't bring sacrifices on Mount Carmel. This is the unusual, the unacceptable. But a Navi has the right and the power to do that. When does he have the power to do that? When he's standing on Har HaCarmel. But to go plan the unusual and the unacceptable is unusual and unacceptable. So why did Yechezkel do it? Unless, of course, we're going to say, and in a sentence I had said it before, if every dedication, in a sense, will be an expression of the non-halachic, if every dedication is in itself something where we expect the unusual to take place, then really, Yechezkel is not telling us that the unusual is going to take place at the establishment of the third Beit HaMikdash, that we know already. All that Yechezkel is telling us is he's revealing to us how it's going to happen. And since there's a big difference between a Navi saying, I now hear this, so says God, the non-halachic is going to be done now. You know when he can do that? Only when he says the non-halachic is going to be done now. But not if he's going to say, listen, in 1,000 or 2,000 years from now, you're going to do the non-halachic. But if we understand now that at the moment of great love, God says, when I bring my presence to rest amongst the Jewish people, I accept the usually or normally unacceptable, and not only I accept the unacceptable, but I expect the unacceptable to take place as a sign of my great love for you, then the pattern has already been established. The pattern was established with the Mishkan. It was established with the first Beit HaMikdash. It was established with the second Beit HaMikdash. If you were to ask anybody in the days of Yechezkel, will there be something unusual and unacceptable or something different halachic, something that really borders on the non-halachic, is something like that going to happen at the dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash? They would have told you yes, which means that Yechezkel is not the one who's establishing the principle. All that Yechezkel is doing is revealing to us how will it express itself. That he can do. If anything, I would say Nadav Vavihu is greater proof of what we're saying. Because yes, Nadav and Avihu might have thought that, listen, the non-halachic is acceptable now. This is the moment of great first love, great passion. Therein lay their mistake. Because the only one who can negate halacha is the one who is the Baal Halacha himself, which is God.
But who's
subject to do this? Oh, of course. Oh, good. That's good that you asked. There's no such thing as we deciding to do the non-halachic. What's the pasuk in Shir HaShirim? Ochalti yarni imdichi. I ate the unacceptable. I took the anal roi with the roi.
They were instructed to bring it.
God forbid that they should have attempted. Oh, no. Oh, God forbid. No, we cannot do that. That's exactly what the metaphor of a halti yadi in dipshi means. That, and Rashi made it clear, that was the medrash, that he ate the unacceptable, he took from the Jewish people the normally unacceptable with the acceptable. It really means that the unacceptable was acceptable there. Now watch. Let's go. I'm going to take you another step further. It would seem therefore that at the establishment of the Mishkan, Bayit 1, 2, 3, an essential part of the dedication is the idea that the unacceptable becomes acceptable. Raputna goes on and says that if we want to understand this, and we have to understand what is so unique and unusual, there were other moments of great love and passion that existed between God and the Jewish people. So he says the following. There is the Mishnah in the Sefer Chagiga says the following: Ein dorshin b'maseh b'reishit b'shnayim. The secrets of creation, two people are not permitted to learn together. We're talking about the real secrets of creation. There is sowed in Maisa Bereshis. The Mishnah, the Halacha, prohibits two people learning it together. If one wants to delve into it alone, he is permitted. Otherwise, no. The Maran Prag explains the meaning of this. So he says the following. The Chachamim tell us that from the beginning of Sefer Bereshit until Shabbos, there what operates is Kvod Elokim, the honor of God, is Hester Dabar, things that are concealed. From Vayechulu and further, the idea that operates is Kvod Elokim, the honor and the glory of God, calls for Chakor Dabar, to investigate. It means that the honor of God, and the truth is, this is the honor of every, the honor and the dignity and the majesty of every human being is both in the fact that they are revealed and concealed. There has to be something hidden about the human personality. Somebody whose life is an open book to the whole world has lost all sense of dignity. There is always dignity and majesty in mystery, the mystery of concealment. There are two ways, and there are two sides, just as, I don't know what you want to say first, just as with God, so with man, or just as with man, so it is with God. There is Kvod Elokim, there is honor of God that is expressed by Hester Dabar, that things are concealed. You don't know everything about God. Maisa Bereshis, what happened at creation and the way in which creation took place, this is beyond the ken of man to understand. And the honor of God is to understand that that is his dignity, and don't try to breach the wall of that dignity. There's the mystery, the shroud that covers God, and that's the human personality. Fact is that the human being is there is greater dignity in a clothed human being than in a non-clothed human being. The mystery and the secrecy, the being, the hiddenness. But then there is another aspect of God. The other side of the coin of God is Kvod Elokim Chakor Dabar. The honor and dignity of God is by investigating and studying and going into everything that he has said to us. But that begins from Vayechulu and further. Until Vayechulu, the Maharal says, concealment is God's dignity. From Vayechulu and further, God's dignity is in studying him and knowing him. Yes. The fact of creation is something that was always accepted and understood by us from the moment the Torah was given to us. We're not talking about that. What they're talking about now is, as scientists become closer to the idea of creation, like the idea of creation, you no longer have to be stark, raving mad, or a fundamentalist to believe in creation. In other words, it really means a sense of humility on the part of science, if science is not able to understand or fully explain all of the mysteries of creation. But we're talking about the mysteries of how the world came into being. There are all sorts of names of God that we use. We're talking in the area of Kabbalah, that's what we're talking about. And that, man has no right to probe that in public. Man has to know, Ad Kan, in your knowledge of God, you go this far. And then there is God's dignity beyond that, you don't go any further. So he says the as a takeoff on the Maharal Prag, Chazal tell us that the construction of the Mishkan, it was equal to creation. Just as in creation there was Shamayim Va'aretz, there was heaven and there was earth, Mishkan also represents heaven and earth. In a sense, Mishkan represents the union of heaven and earth. God's divine presence coming down to rest amongst the Jewish people. Mishkan, Chazal tell us, even the parts of the Mishkan represented it represented the creation of the world in miniature. Now, if by the creation of the world there is Shamayim and there is Oretz, Shamayim represents the mysterious, and Oretz represents that which. Well, I would say the pasuk in Hallel, Hashamayim, Shamayim, LaHashem, VaHaoretz Lasam LeElam. There is an aspect of God's personality that is Shamayim, heaven, concealed. None of your business. Don't go beyond the parameters that were left for you. HaOretz, not Thomas, but the earth he gave to men. What I'm really saying with that is, Torah. What does God say about Torah? Lo bashamayim hi, it is not in heaven. What does it mean, not in heaven? A Navi cannot, we cannot decide a halach on the basis of prophecy. Do you know how we're supposed to arrive at an understanding of halacha? By using the human mind. We have all sorts of ways of studying and delving into Torah and taking out its inner meaning. But that has to be done by the human mind. It cannot be that a prophet is going to walk into the Beis Medrash and says, God appeared to me and said that the halacha is the following. We tell him, Yashikayach, do me a favor, unacceptable. We have to figure out the halacha ourselves. Lo bashamayimi. Lo bashamayimi. But there is, just as in creation, there is an area of creation that is shamayim, and there's an area of creation that is oretz. Part is mystery, the other is revealed. Part is given to Nevuah, and the other is given to man. So too it is with the construction of the Mishkan. In the construction of the Mishkan, which brings together, or the Bet HaMikdash, which brings together heaven and earth, there is something that is concealed beyond the ken of man, and there is that which is revealed. How does this mystery of Chibor Rishon, or the moment of great love, how does it express itself? You know how it expresses itself? By, in a sense, uprooting something from Torah. Torah represents earth. When there is something that is done that is non-halachic, that means we are now in what domain? We're in the domain of heaven. In the domain of heaven, God is the one who decides. In the domain of earth, it is man who decides. When heaven and earth come together, then you have to have a part of it is the Shamayim. The dedication of the Mishkan, Bet Mikdash, Rishon, Sheni, and Shlishi are like from beginning of Bereshis until Vayechulu, where the honor and dignity of God is Hester Dover, concealment. He is the one who decides, and not we. from the end of dedication, and then for all generations, Mishkan, Bayit 1, 2, 3, their halacha and man's mind reigns supreme. Which means the following. You know what we're left with right now? We're left with something extremely troublesome. It means that the unusual and the unacceptable, which represents great love, appeared three times and then will appear for the fourth time when the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be built. What about the moment of the Chanukat HaMizbeach by the Chashmonaim? There is nothing there that is beyond the halacha. Now there is something else about the Chanukah of the 25th of Kislev that's different than Mishkan, first, second, and to be third Beit HaMikdash. Those other four are in times when prophecy exists. There are prophets. The only Chanukah that takes place at a moment in history when there is no prophecy is the Chanukah. Oh, there certainly will be Melech HaMashiach! Melech HaMashiach is going to be a Navi! What are you talking about? So that all dedications take place at a time of prophecy. The only dedication that does not take place at the time of prophecy is the Chanukat HaChashmonaim. Is there any less love over there? Is there no expression of God's great love and passion for the Jewish people? Does he not express it in some kind of... Why doesn't he express it in some kind of a non-halachic way? You know, I knew what was going on in your mind, so you were going to tell me the miracle of the jar of oil. That's an expression of God's love for us. The unusual, huh?
This was a rededication.
If I accept that, then I can stop right now. I'm finished. But I'll tell you, you know why? I owe you more than that. Remember, the Rambam had said, Ner Chanukah, we started with that, Ner Chanukah, mitzvah chavivoi admaod. It is a very beloved mitzvah. Just this morning, I looked again at the Pnei Yoshua, one of the Mefarshim, on the Masechta Shabbos, who says that the moment of the Ness of the menorah was in order to tell Klal Yisrael that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chazar l'chibo harishona, he returned to the original love. If those are the words of the Pnei Yeshua, then you know what he's saying? He's saying that the Chanukat HaBayit in the days of the Chashmonaim equals chibo harishona, the first moment of love. Those are the words that Rashi used to describe God's divine presence coming down in the Mishkan. So the Rambam and the Pnei Yeshua and others describe the moment, that day, Chav Hei Kislev, they describe it as Chibor Yishona. It's another expression of first love. If there's another expression of first love, there's something missing over here. There is not the non-halachic. There isn't the Ochalti Yadi Indipshi. I ate the unacceptable with the acceptable. Ha'eno Roi Im Haroi. So why was this different? So here he says something very, very, very beautiful. Very beautiful. I think I had to go over it 10 times until I suddenly hit the beauty of this. The Zohar says, Istakel ba'oraita u'bara alma. God looked into Torah and he created the world. Torah is the blueprint for the world. What does that mean? Torah is the blueprint for the natural world. What happens if something unnatural or supernatural happens? Isn't that, in a sense, moving out of the realm of Torah? If nature was created by Torah, Ness, therefore, is something that represents a moving out of halacha. So therefore the Neis Pach HaShemen is moving out of Teva. Moving out of Teva is moving out of Torah. What we're going to have to explain is, why is that the way In other words, so we are going to say that the Nes Pach Hashem and the miracle of the jar of oil is the Chiva Rishona, represents the moment of great love where a change is taking place. The unusual is happening. But the unusual is happening not in a definite halachic sense, but it the unusual is happening in a sense, in a an imagined non-halachic sense. If Torah equals nature, God created the world on the basis of looking at the Torah, so anything that is beyond the natural is in that sense beyond the halachic. And in a sense, that's sort of uprooting something from the Torah. In Sefer Daniel, and I hope maybe we will get there, in Sefer Daniel talks, there's one of the great dreams is about the four kingdoms. There are four kingdoms in history. The prophetic four kingdoms. Babel, Paras, Babylon, Persia, Yavon, Greece is the third. And the fourth, which is the one that will exist until the coming of Mashiach, is Edom. Rome. Chazal always referred to Rome as Edom, or the Christian world as Edom. There's something about the Jews are saved from the first two kingdoms, Babel and Paras, not by vanquishing Babel and Paras. Babel and Paras are kingdoms that crumble, and because they crumble, Jews are free. No more Babel. Jews don't bring down Babel. Jews don't bring down Paras. But the third kingdom, Yavon, we bring them down. There is open battle, open struggle between Jews and Greece, and we destroy Greece. We remove the shackles. In other words, there's the confrontation between Jews and Greeks, and Jews prevail. Why does that happen in the coming together of Jews and Greece, and not so by the other kingdoms? This is related to the Mishkan and to the idea of prophecy by Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "V'niflinu ani v'amcha," in Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Ani v'amcha mikol ha'am asher al pnei ha'adama." By the dedication of the Mishkan, he says, we should be separate and distinct. We should be separate and distinct with you from all of the nations upon the face of this earth. Says the Gemara, says Moshe Rabbeinu hitpalel, Moshe Rabbeinu prayed that God should not bring his divine presence to rest upon the nations of the world. The divine presence will rest only in Israel. The divine presence of prophecy, real prophecy, will only be by Klal Yisrael, by nobody else. Yavon, Greece, presented us with a completely different challenge. The challenge of Greece was not Nevuah, not prophecy, not Shekhinah. But do you know what Yavon had? Chachma, great wisdom. And what happens over here in the clash between Jews and Greece? It's the clash between Chachmas Yisrael, Torah, and Chachmas Yavon, the wisdom of Greece. These two are in conflict. And what happens when these two are in conflict? One has to vanquish the other. If Greece will remain, and Greece was the source of wisdom, the great wisdom of the ancient world. Didn't we say it? We said it yesterday in the... I don't even remember how it came into the Chumashi yesterday. But we said that, listen, they gave us Socrates, Aristotle, and Plato. And I'll tell you, the women are better than the men. I used the same line by the men yesterday and this year as I did by the women. That since Socrates, Aristotle, and Plato, Greece has given us nothing except Anthony Quinn. So, and then the women immediately thought that the men are still trying to figure out who is better than Anthony Quinn. Zohar in Greek, yeah. That they might have understood. There's a clash between two great wisdoms. The wisdom of Israel and the wisdom of Greece. When Moshe Rabbeinu asks that we be separate and distinct from all nations upon the face of this earth, he's really asking not only that the divine presence should rest in Israel, but ultimate greatness and wisdom should also be Klal Yisrael. There is wisdom by the nations of the world. But you see what's fascinating? You maybe never noticed it. Why didn't Greece produce, after Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Sophocles, all the rest of them, why did they never produce anyone after that? Why did they? I mean, they're really, nobody really great to talk about in Greece. And so they had a golden age of tremendous, tremendous wisdom that is as alive today as it was then.
They continued in their bankrupt religion.
All right, it could be their idolatry. And I saw, not related to this, but I saw a cook who said that God, in a sense, planted at different moments in history great people, and when there was no longer any need, in other words, the great philosophers of Greece did their job. That's it, that was the contribution. Greece no longer had to make any contribution to wisdom. But getting back to what we're talking about over here, it means therefore the following. The struggle, why must there be a struggle between Greece and Rome? Because they are locked in intellectual battle. Between Jews and Greece, good. Between Jews and Greece, because they're locked in intellectual battle. The struggle is not merely a struggle over land. They're not concerned with land. What they're concerned about is with Greek culture. That's the struggle between the two. And therefore, ultimately, when the struggle is going to be decided in favor of Jews, it has to be decided in a non-prophetic way, because it's not a struggle over here between the Shechina of prophecy and Greece. It's between Chochmas Yisrael and Chochmas Yavon, which means all of the other dedications. All of the other dedications, the moment of great love and passion, is defined through prophecy that tells them that now you're going to do something that is non-halachic because of this great moment of love. But when we're talking about the struggle between Rome and between Greece and Klal Yisrael, where it's a struggle between two wisdoms, then it's not going to be through through prophecy, but it's going to be through something that is non-prophetic. It's going to be something that is going to come, and the non-prophetic is the Pach HaShemen that lasts for 8 days. But what? There is something. What is the great love of Hanukkah? There are four dedications. One hasn't happened yet, right? Mishkan, first Beit HaMikdash, second Beit HaMikdash. Then there's ultimately going to be the third. But there is one area in which Hanukkah rises above all of them. There is no mitzvah that was left for all generations as a commemoration of the dedication of the Mishkan. There was no mitzvah or manner of conduct that remained with Klal Yisrael for all time in order to mark the dedication of the first Beit HaMikdash or the second. But the only one that's going to remain for all times is Hanukkah. And not only that, now I think of it, the Gemara tells us, what bracha do you say when you make the Hanukkah candles? When you light the Hanukkah candles? Asher kedshanu v'tzosa v'tzivonu lahadlik ne'er shel Hanukkah. Only if you're not Chabad. If you're Chabad, you leave out the shell. Understand? We had a little Chabad boy who lit the candles. I imagine when Clinton lit it last night, they must have told him how to do it Chabad way. Ner Hanukkah, lahadlik ner Hanukkah. But otherwise, we, rest of us, say ner shel Hanukkah. So the Gemara asks, where did God command us? Gemara doesn't ask this by any, In other words, it's a problem in every mitzvah that is a mitzvah derabbanan, a mitzvah that is by rabbinic decree. How can you say Asher kedishanu v'mitzvah that God sanctified us and He commanded us to do such and such? He didn't command us. The rabbis commanded us. Says the Gemara, you know where? Because it says in Torah, lo tosur min hadavah, you should not turn away from that which the rabbis tell you, to the right or to the left. In other words, the rabbis represent Torah Sheba'al Peh of the rabbis we keep. Part of it because it was given at Sinai, the rest because Torah itself says that we're supposed to listen to the rabbis. Why does the Gemara discuss this only by Hanukkah? Because by Hanukkah what's coming to the fore is the idea that Chochmas Yisrael rises over Chochmas Yavan and vanquishes it. Because there are two dimensions to Chochmas Yisrael, and there is only one dimension to Chochmas Yavam. Jewish wisdom can be wisdom of Kodesh and wisdom of Chol, wisdom that's sacred and holy, and wisdom that is everyday. Chochmas Yavam is only Chochmas Chol, it is only Chochmah that is not sacred and is everyday. That was the struggle. And that struggle was brought to an end on Hanukkah. So the dedication over here is not a dedication through the eyes of prophets, because prophecy is not that which is in question now. It's not the supremacy of the Jewish people through prophecy that Hanukkah comes to tell us about. All of the other dedications tell us the supremacy of the Jewish people because the divine presence is amongst them, and one of the ways in which that divine presence is expressed is through the fact that we have prophets and no other nation of the world has prophets. Would there be another nation of the world that has prophets? This would be a rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu's prayer to God, v'niflinu ani v'amcha, I and your people should be separate and distinct. You shouldn't let your divine presence rest upon the nation of the world. And there never has been prophecy by any other nation on the face of this earth. Prophecy is unique and distinct to Klal Yisrael. What happened on Hanukkah was not only in terms of prophecy, but even in terms of wisdom. There is a wisdom of Kodesh, and the wisdom of Kodesh is that which rises superior over the wisdom of Chol. That is that's the Yontif of Hanukkah, and therefore it means now that Hanukkah joins the entire list. Dedication of the Mishkan, dedication of the first Beit HaMikdash, second Beit HaMikdash, Hanukkah, third Beit HaMikdash. It's all one idea, where the unusual and the unacceptable has to take place, because that represents the Chibur Rishona, the moment of great first love. So therefore, when Ezra came up from the Golah, and they bring sacrifices, their sacrifices simply are not within the realm or the purview of the halachic, because what they fall into the category is the category of Shamayim, not Oretz. In the category of Shamayim, we talk about that which is concealed, and we are not fully able to plumb the depths or comprehend. There it is secrecy and mystery that reigns. That's from Bereshis until Vayechulu, and from Vayechulu and further, Kvod Elokim, there the honor of God comes through Chakor Dovah, to investigate and to study and be involved in. The mystery, in Hanukkah we have the mystery is the nace of the Pach HaShemen. The revealed part is the ultimate victory of the Jewish people over Greece. Therefore, the Rambam is so careful and so beautiful that he uses the word that Ner Chanukah Mitzvah Chaviva Hi Amod. It is very beloved, because isn't that the word that Rashi uses in the name of the Medrash? That why does the unacceptable or the unusual happen? Because of Chibur Rishona, the great moment of first love. And the great moment of first love is expressed by the unusual and the normally otherwise unacceptable. And that's why Pnei Yoshua says that ultimately the Nes of Hanukkah was intended in order to tell Klal Yisrael that Chozra Chibur Rishona Limekoma. Those I think those are his exact words. Chazra chiba rishona lemakama. The original first love that God had for the Jewish people has returned to its place. There is, the relationship is renewed. It is a new moment, a new great beginning of Chazra. Wasn't easy. That's it. Yeah.
With the third day from the Josh, you're going to have a combination of Yeshua and Kibush.
Yeah, where did you hear that? Whoever told you that? Oh, okay, yeah.
And then, what about concerning...
You said it too?
No, that's
the Rambam. That's the Rambam. That's not Aaron Soloveitchik. That's the... Quoted the Rambam. Yes, I quoted the Rambam too. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So in other words, we had all the dedications which have to do with the Shekhinah coming from us, from the Aretz, to provide unity of Hashem, to provide unity of Hashem. The third Beit HaMikdash is really when everything will be visible and
therefore?
I'm just saying, we needed the Nes of Hanukkah. In other words, we needed the dedication of Hanukkah where we had the initiative of vanquishing the Chochmat Yavan, which we...
Oh, that's right. I like what you're saying. In other words, we had, since it's a matter not of Nevuah, but it's a matter of Chochmah, so we had to become active in that struggle.
Right.
In the other... Right. I go along with you. Yes.
Was there anything unusual in the sacrifices that the...
That the Hashmonaim brought? No, nothing. Nothing.
So
that's the whole point. Right. That's the whole point. The whole point is, why is this dedication different than all other dedications? In all other dedications, there was a non-halachic or an anti-halachic aspect to it in order to demonstrate the first love. This is the only one in which... There was no such thing. And why couldn't there be such a thing? Because there was no prophecy at the time of Hanukkah. So that means all other dedications, there was a prophet who told them what to do. Now there was no prophet. And then, of course, we also explained, if you have a prophet who's going to tell you what to do at the time, why is Yecheskel telling you what's going to happen 2,000 or 3,000 years later? Because by the time of Yecheskel, the pattern had already been established. That Chiba Rishona, God had already demonstrated that Chiba Rishona, the moment of first love, is a moment at which the unusual and the acceptable, unacceptable, becomes usual and acceptable. Achalti Yariyim Divshi, I ate the Ro'i, the Eino Ro'i, in the Ro'i, the unacceptable, the acceptable. I thank you.